Aloha, I'm Dr. Kathleen Kozak. Welcome to The Body Show. Each week we talk about health and fitness, but none of what we discuss replaces a visit to your own primary care provider. Our guest today has a very compelling story. Lee Johnson wasn't going to give up his fight. In his 40s, he was diagnosed with non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. It's a blood cancer, and he really felt this was related to his exposure and work with chemicals that he used as an integrated pest manager at a small school in the Bay Area in California. And he was so convinced that there were some problems with exposure to this chemical that he went as far as taking the company responsible, Monsanto Bayer, to court. And he won. And today we're going to hear his story about what happened with while he was working with these chemicals, when his medical trajectory started to occur, where he's at now, and what the response has been to his efforts to really enlighten the public about the potential of even children going to schools and having exposure to some of the chemicals that might be used in some of our farming and in some pesticides that could potentially bring danger. So I want to thank you for coming to the studio today to share what has been a total change in your life over the last several years.
Right. Yeah. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for being here. Now, you were working as on the grounds of a school. What were you doing and how long were you doing it? And what was your usual daily routine and experience before all this happened?
Before it happened, I wasn't even working for the school district. I was working as an independent guy that would show up with a lot more and a weed whacker and a blower and do yards up and down the block and other different little handy jobs that I can get into. And then I was hired by the Benicia Unified School District, and that's when I started to use herbicide.
And where were you using this, and how, for someone who, you know, I don't deal with plants because I try and be really good. I'm easily either overwatering them or underwatering them, doing something that I shouldn't be doing. So as someone who might not have experience using any type of an herbicide, what is it and why would you be using such a thing?
So I didn't really experience herbicide until I started working for the Benicia Unified School District. So an herbicide is something that you spray that's supposed to be safer than a pre-emergent or any other pesticide that you might use. It's supposed to be the safest around that's out. And that herbicide basically kills the weeds that you see. It kills the leaf, and you come by after the leaf is dead and you hit it with a weed whacker, and it will take that away for a few days. But if it rains, it'll come right back. But yeah, that's what herbicides are. They're to control weeds.
And would an herbicide kill regular grass in addition to the weeds, or really just the weeds?
Herbicides can kill a lot of things. Herbicides can kill a small tree. If you mix it right, if you want to kill a tree, you can kill a tree. But it depends on the mix. So it comes with a pamphlet that you're supposed to carry on you, and that pamphlet will tell you if you want to kill dandelions or if you want to kill cheeseweed or mallow, then you spray this amount, mix this amount of water, and it will kill that. But don't spray it on things that you want, like roses or whatever else. It's going to kill everything in its sight.
So, you know, in the medical world, it's almost like antibiotics. If you go too strong, you kill the good bacteria and the bad bacteria. You try and target to the particular condition that you're treating as much as possible. So in this case, it's kind of similar. I mean, yeah. It's an analogy. Well, in my world, it kind of reminds me, don't use too many antibiotics because right. There's always going to be consequences. And you may not know the full consequences, but be careful with your use of those. And that's something the medical community has had to struggle with and really has tried to do our best to manage that.
Yeah.
So you're working in this situation where you have to create a mix. So you have different chemicals and water, and you're putting this together in a mix to address certain weeds and other things that you're trying to get rid of in a environment that is related to groundskeeping and outdoors.
Exactly. But I didn't deal with different chemicals. I dealt with one product and one major chemical, and that product was called Ranger Pro. Like a lot of people will say Roundup, but Roundup to me is to what guys would use in their yard in on the weekend in the backyard. Ranger Pro is what you use when you want to cover some real serious ground and you have a variety of different weeds that you want to kill at one time.
And what's the main chemical in Ranger Pro?
Glyphosate. So we've heard about glyphosate over and over, and it's called glyphosate glycine. Yeah, that's the major product that people are having problems with right now.
What sort of problems?
Cancer, lymphoma. It's known to even, you know, the only thing they can test it on is mice. They can't test it on you and I. It's unethical to test it on humans. So, like, even I had to ask myself and my attorneys, you know, does mice even have lymphatic systems? But they do. And they have come up with lesions and things just like the ones that I have. So it's been known to give lesions to mice.
So when did you first notice that maybe you were having a problem?
Exactly when, I don't know, because my thing happened over a gradual amount of time. And then just like I'm trying to encourage people to do now, like I spoke to the DOE yesterday, and I'm trying to get people to have notes and take record of when you see lesions or if you see marks or if you've been exposed. If you got exposed today, you need to mark that down. And then if something happens 3 months or 2 weeks from now, we know that something happened from your exposure. So I didn't really write that down. So I don't really know exactly when, but it happened from one mark and then it spread out all over my body from just to 80% over my body.
So you were using this chemical herbicide, the Ranger Pro,
right,
and you were using it in the course of your daily activities. Were you aware of what sort of precautions might be necessary? Was there any information given to you about how to use this safely?
So we were trained annually by a trainer who would come out from a local irrigation and I would say supply store for, you know, major landscaping situations. She would come out every year and she would train us on the use of Roundup, or what the people, what we use is called Ranger Pro, but people know it as Roundup. But yeah, she would come and train us every year. We would take a little one sheet training and it took about an hour or two, and she gave us instructions and options of things to do. And that's when I first heard that it was safe enough to drink. So I felt like it was a pretty safe product.
I hope you didn't drink it.
No, I didn't drink it.
Even though they say safe enough, I still
didn't drink it. Didn't look tasty, didn't smell tasty. So, no, I didn't drink it. And what I've learned through my training before I was licensed and after I become licensed, that anything that is a side, if it says side on the end, it means kill. It should come with the crossbones on the skull, because it says that a side, anything, pesticides, herbicides, is all meant to kill something.
And it'll do that.
It definitely will.
So you were using this for several years in the part of your daily activities at work. And so it was after repetitive exposure, do you think, that you started to notice some of these skin lesions? Was that your first sign that you had a problem?
Yeah. So in California, we're not allowed to use this stuff all throughout the year. It's very regulated in California. And I'm learning that it's definitely not the same out here. But in California, it's definitely regulated. We spray maybe 3-4 times a year. Where we had like what we call a spray season. And then if we had to, because once this stuff gets any water on it, it blooms back up like popcorn, right? It just pops back up. And so if it rains in, you know, sometime in January or February, which is not an ideal time to be spraying pesticides, but if you get a little sunny day, sometime in Cali, we get a lot of solid, you know, sunny days here and there. So we were able to spray sometimes 6 times a year, but usually it was 3-4.
All right, I'm Dr. Kathleen Kozak here in the studio with Lee Johnson. He is the man who took on the Monsanto Bayer company looking at the use of Ranger Pro or Roundup and how this could medically impact people who were exposed to the chemicals that were included. When we come back, we're going to talk more about what he first noticed and how that has affected his health since then, and what are some of the things that he would recommend that we consider right here locally to try and protect ourselves from potential exposure to chemicals that we might not need to use for different ways that we can handle outdoors and the plants and trees and bushes that grow in our beautiful paradise. We'll be right back. Stay with us. Welcome back to The Body Show. I'm Dr. Kathleen Kozak, and I'm here in a studio with Lee Johnson, and he's talking about what happened when he was exposed to certain chemicals that we know cause problems, at least in the research we found in mice, and we know it's not something we're going to be testing in humans, but you were exposed to this particular chemical that is in Ranger Pro, otherwise known as Roundup, and you had been using it as part of your job, doing some spraying outdoors to weeds and plants and other things that were not desirable for the location where you were using it. And you mentioned that you noticed some areas on your skin that were problematic. What is it that you noticed, and when did that start to spread and bring yourself to a doctor to get medical attention?
So I was exposed by a power sprayer. There was a 150-gallon sprayer hooked to a Honda engine, and a situation happened where the hose became detached from the machine. And a product was funneling out of the back of the truck, and I had to get in the truck to stop the liquid from causing further damage to not only myself or other people. So I ended up getting exposed by that funnelage of liquid. It got down in my Tyvek suit. It got in my PPE, which is personal protective equipment. It got all over me. I don't even know how far it went. But after that, I noticed what I call a mother mark on my knee. And that mother mark just got really bad, really painful, and it started to spread from there. So I ended up getting a biopsy and finding out that I had non-Hodgkin lymphoma in that mark. And from there on in, it's just been a roller coaster of trying to find things that can at least keep this stuff at bay, because there's no cure for my situation at this point.
So when you first noticed that initial lesion or that initial spot, It was painful. It was something you were concerned about. Did it spread elsewhere in your body, or did you go to get it checked out when it was just there on the knee?
The just there on the knee at first, I'm thinking, you know, I do outside work. Maybe I came in contact with something. It's a little mark. I'll do this. I'll do that. It'll go away. So I did everything from creams to ointments to changing my soap powder to separate my laundry from their family and doing a whole different thing, trying to figure out what was going on, all kind of creams and everything, but nothing seemed to work. And that's what landed me trying to find some medical advice, and I ended up with a dermatologist, and that's when the first biopsy was done. I never knew what a biopsy was. I've had over 25 of them now, but At that point, I never even knew what a biopsy was. So my first biopsy was a true experience to get a plug biopsy taken out of my skin. So, yeah, that was unreal. So they sent that out to Stanford, and actually they didn't send it to Stanford. I think that was to
a major lab. You know, usually
a major lab. What's it called?
When you do a pathology, when you do a biopsy, you send it to a pathology lab.
Yeah, they sent it to the major place out there, and they came back with the results of having non-Hodgkin lymphoma.
It's funny because you did all those things we tell patients to do. Check your detergent. Try using a steroid cream. Change your lotion. Change your, you know, body soap. See if there's some other irritant that you might be exposed to that could be causing it. And we actually tell people to do exactly what you did. You take a look, try some creams. Did you try a new perfume, or did you try something new that for whatever reason would be exposed in an isolated area? And when it doesn't resolve, then you went and saw a dermatologist, as I would tell people to do at any time. And they did a biopsy. You take a piece of it. Your goal is to take a look at it under a microscope, identify what this particular area is. And for a lot of dermatology biopsies, it could just be nonspecific. But in your case, It sounds like they found there's a diagnosis here. This is related to non-Hodgkin's lymphoma.
At first, they really didn't say just non-Hodgkin lymphoma. Like you said, it was variant things in that biopsy that they said it could be this, it could be that. And that's when it was really scary. That was the scariest time, because it was so different to them that they didn't really know what it was and why I would have this on my knee. So, you know, they were really concerned, and they gave me a really bad diagnosis at first. You know, that it was really scary for them and scary for me, because they didn't know what was going on. They was really confused on why would you get this on your knee.
And how long did it take for them to come to the diagnosis, the correct diagnosis?
Well, like I said, the second hospital it went to, I know the first hospital that it went to was UCSF in San Francisco. And then it went to, I don't know why I can't remember the name of this other hospital, but it's a very big hospital out in Northern California. And they did their testing also, but they still couldn't pin it down. So they really start doing more testing, and they wanted to try to figure out just exactly what it was. And then after I became, you know, closer with Kaiser Permanente is when they really start narrowing it down and saying, okay, no, it's not Hodgkin's lymphoma, and we don't know how you got it, but we just want to treat it. They never would answer any questions on where it came from or how or whatever. They just wanted to try to treat it.
And what were some of your initial treatments?
I have had treatments where I took, I think it was up to 12 or 13 pills a day. I don't even remember what that medication was called, but I took it every day until I just couldn't take it anymore from all the side effects. And then I had chemo. I've had radiation. I've had light therapy, which is UV therapy, where you stand in like a big Coke can and they cook you with these fluorescent lights. I've had it all. I've had IV or injections where I'm taking right now also. This is the second or I think the third intravenous treatments that I've taken, and it's called Keytruda, which I call the Jimmy Carter drug because it saved Jimmy Carter's life. So I'm hoping that it saves my life. I've only had one needle of this stuff, one injection of this, so I don't know if it's going to work or not until we have more treatments, but I'm hoping for the best and hoping that it's something that can help with a cure, because the chemo and the radiation was just something to try to comfort the patient. This drug is supposedly curing people and giving them a year, 2 years, 5 years, 6 years of no sign of the illness in their system or physically. So I'm hoping that that's what I end up with.
I'm hoping the same for you.
Right.
Now, after each of these different treatments that you've had, the chemotherapy, the radiation, the UV light therapy, did you have a recurrence? Was your cancer resistant to it?
I haven't had any real relief in 5 years.
So it just didn't even respond?
No. We've had some, maybe one or two, no more than 6 months of relief. And this stuff is so aggressive and so fast moving that you can't even call it any relief, because I haven't really seen any time where I said, wow, my old skin is back. I've had some times where I said, wow, I'm still screwed up, but I'm better than I was before. So no, there hasn't been any relief. There hasn't been anything that I've taken or any 6 months of radiation that cleared me up. All it did was darken me up and crunchied my skin up more and gave me worse situations.
All right, I'm Dr. Kathleen Kozak here in the studio with Lee Johnson. And when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit more about what led his medical condition to turn into a legal battle and what were the results of that and how that is still something that he is in the midst of dealing with, this chronic condition. I mean, I hate to call it a chronic illness, but this cancer has become your chronic illness in a way that hopefully we've talked about some of the treatments, and you mentioned two injections of Keytruda. Maybe that will bring you to the same one injection. Maybe that'll bring you to the same results that we're hoping that you have seen other people get. So when we come back, we're going to talk more about it. We'll be right back. Stay with us. Welcome back to The Body Show. I'm Dr. Kathleen Kozak here in the studio with Lee Johnson, and we've been talking about his diagnosis of non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, which started off with a skin lesion that went on to require additional treatments, not only the treatments first a diagnosis, which was difficult enough, and then subsequently chemotherapy, radiation, UV treatments and therapy, and now intravenous Keytruda, and all in an effort to try and help contain this condition. So when you visibly look at your skin, you can see where you have this lymphoma present.
Oh, yeah, I definitely can see it. I'm not a bragging person or a person that would try to put my own self on a pedestal, but my skin was pretty good. Like, I would say close to flawless. I've had people even compliment me on just my skin. Oh, your skin is so nice. But after being diagnosed and after using the product and after going through what I've been through for the last 5 years, my skin is totally ruined. Sometimes I can't even look at my own skin. So, yeah, it's pretty noticeable to me.
When did your medical battle become a legal battle?
So my medical situation got pretty bad to the point to where I had to refuse to keep spraying the product. But I was contracted to spray the product. I was even paid what's called a stipend, an extra amount of money outside of my regular salary. I was paid a little bit more, and two other guys were paid a little bit more to spray this product inside the maintenance department. So once I couldn't spray the product, they didn't really come down hard on me like, hey, you better spray this stuff. Or they didn't come down like that, but it was a situation where you are contracted to do this. If you can't do it, we have to go through these steps, and the last step would be that you probably would be dismissed from the position. So they went through everything they could. They didn't really give me a hard time, but they definitely did have to remove me from the position. And that's what happened, is that when I was getting closer to being removed, I was already trying to figure out what was going on with my health and what I could do. And so I was on the internet a lot because I was off work. I had nothing else to do. So I was just on the internet all the time just trying to figure out what to do about the situation. So my whole life didn't fall apart.
And so what did you figure out to do? What was the step that said, I have to take this further?
Well, that's incredible because, you know, like I said, my situation would not be what it is right now if it had not been for the internet. If the internet didn't exist right now, then I would not exist in this situation. So when I went on the internet, I found a lot of information that led me to legal help. It led me to find out stories about people that had been through what I've been through, that had been silenced, paid off the magic amount of, which I think is $50,000 each person. So once I found out these facts and found out what these folks are really trying to do as far as the food that we eat, then it kind of just made me upset and kind of made me lead to the Miller firm. The Miller firm was already doing this by me just going and looking for glyphosate and lymphoma and these different things. That's what led me to the Miller firm. They had a website that was prepared before all these commercials and whatever you see now. They had a website that already had that there. Like, if you've been exposed or you think you've been exposed and you have lymphoma, contact us. And it was like, I had no other choice but to contact these people. So I contacted them, and Mr. Tim Litzenberg got back in touch with me, and the Miller firm took my case, and here we are today.
And so what was the result in that case? What were the findings, and what was admitted and what wasn't?
Some things weren't admitted. You know, they were not admitted to put the commercial out that says, you know, it's safe enough to drink. They weren't allowed to put out, you know, things that said, you know, about the executive that was at the talk show where they offered him, you know, a cup of glyphosate, and he refused to drink it. It's a lot of things that weren't allowed to be admissible in court, but there was a lot of things that were admissible in court. The fact that, you know, the emails and the ghostwriting, all the things that people know about now, and the things that they don't know about that the lawyers are able to obtain since my case went as far as it went. So it's a lot of information right now that no one had that's coming out now that is very serious and detrimental to the situation that these folks have been doing for years.
And so what do you think should happen?
What I've always said that I wanted to happen is that they should do a label change. They should give people an informed choice of, if you want to use this stuff, You can use it if you want to, but you do need to know that it could cause cancer. Even like I've said that one of the doctors that I dealt with during all this stuff said that, you know, because I'm African American, which I don't call myself African American, I call myself a Black American because I'm not from Africa. I'm from America. I descend from Africa. So he said that because I'm African American, that's probably one of the reasons why. So if that's the reason why, it should be on the label. If you're Black, maybe you shouldn't use this product. Or if you're from this nation or that part of the country, whatever, maybe you shouldn't, because it's for certain people that can take it, certain people can't, but they can't really figure that out because there's no testing.
And it's not ethical necessarily to do those tests. Sure.
Right. So they don't really know. They're kind of guessing whether it's safe or not, because mice are only results that they have. Or, to be honest, they do say that they'll take a guy that's been spraying this stuff for 20 years. They'll take a guy that's been spraying it for 20 years, that's been doing it. They take a few of them and see just who gets sick and who doesn't, which is, you know, I don't know how that works, but they have to report it some type of way. And I don't know how that happens, but they don't have real results on how to really test this stuff. So it's really just something that is out there that they're hoping that doesn't get people sick. But it's coming out now, and we're finding out facts that it does get people sick. It's getting pets sick. It's getting animals sick. It's doing a lot more harm than it is good.
And so getting that information out, allowing people to make an informed choice as to whether or not they want to be exposed by choosing to use the product, would be something that would be an agreeable, something you would want to see in the future, that at least making an informed choice. In medicine, we want people to understand the risks and side effects of using any type of a particular product, whether it be an FDA prescription medicine or anything that might be out there, giving them the informed choice opportunity.
Right.
And then also doing some of the studies to say, hey, are there more people like yourself out there that might have a diagnosis? That's sort of a retrospective study where we identify who has a particular exposure. Have they had any sort of outcome that has resulted in something similar to yourself? And if so, do they have some similar themes? Are they all of a similar racial background or geographic background or percent number of years of use of chemicals? So
exactly,
there are some ways that we can identify that in a scientific study that can actually help to figure out what those risks may be. Mm-hmm. So those would be things you'd love to see come out of all of this.
I would love to.
In addition to having you respond well to the treatments,
yes,
and getting many more years that you can enjoy spending time with your family and loved ones,
right,
and hopefully enjoying the islands.
Yep.
Well, we're going to have you back on and help to really have all of us take a look at how we're using some of these different herbicides and chemicals in our environment. And do we know about all the potential risks? And are we making the informed choice that we think we may be? I want to thank you, Mr. Johnson, for coming on the show and sharing your experience with us today. And if you'd like to hear the show again, you can click on hawaiipublicradio.org. Follow the links to The Body Show. Our engineer is David Chong. I'm Dr. Kathleen Kozak. We'll see you next week when we talk more about medical topics right here on The Body Show.